Live,
a podcast of the cinema.
It is a film review podcast hosted by the dynamic team of Alonzo Duralde and Dave White, both of whom are real, live, warm, wriggling.
I don't know where this is going.
Passionate film critics.
For the rap.
Yeah. And then
and espoused
to one another.
Yes.
Yeah. Where did you go? How long were you gone? What happened?
It's like I don't
where
even know.
Where are we now? What's going on?
Why do I ever tell you things? I was in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Yeah.
For the Virginia Film Festival.
Yeah.
Which was wonderful.
Autumnal and whatnot.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful time of year.
It was 93 degrees here.
I heard. I was very happy to not be here for that.
And you know, sometimes that does happen in October in Los Angeles, but I never like it when it does.
Of course.
It's back to normal now.
Yeah.
But wait, bleh.
Did you avail yourself to some air conditioning?
Why would I do that?
To have a comfy night's sleep.
Well, it wasn't hot at night. The temperatures dropped down into the 60s at night, which was fine. You kept the windows open. Everything's good.
It wasn't clingy?
No.
Mm.
No. But the daytime was gross. And I don't like an electric bill that goes...
Oh, you big baby.
I don't like an electric bill that goes up in the high reaches.
Remember how
of
part
anywhere?
Of your reasoning for wanting an air conditioner was so that we wouldn't be those old people that die in a heat wave?
Okay, so here's the deal.
You're going to be the old person who dies in a heat wave. You're like, well, I didn't want to turn it on because I might have my electric bill's going to go up $2.
Oh, no. See, this is what happens when one person in the relationship keeps track of the bills and the budget and the bank accounts. And the other person just goes, "Wee, let's turn on the AC." We live in a place where not a lot of electricity is happening because we don't have
central air.
A dishwasher. We don't have central air. We wash our dishes by hand. We have a window unit air conditioner that we only use like a cumulative 2 weeks out of the summer.
Okay, how much more would our bill jump if
I'm
you
going
used
to tell
it for
you,
one night?
I'm going to tell you.
One delicious
think about
night
how often we used
of
it
refrigerated
this,
air.
Think about how often we used it this summer
mm-hmm.
when it was an extremely mild summer and we barely needed it.
Yes.
And how many days did we require the use of that air conditioner? Half a dozen?
Fewer than 10.
Half a dozen.
Okay.
Roughly.
Sure.
That month that we did that,
mm-hmm.
Our electric bill shot up $50.
Okay, so you could have gotten one night for $8.
I vow to you right now that when we are actually old, I mean we're already old, but I mean like old, when you're in danger of things being too hot and you being like, oh, I'm still cold, you know, like. First of all, I don't think that's ever going to happen to me. Because
yeah, no, me neither. I don't.
It can be 45 degrees outside, and I'm like, woohoo, take it off my shirt, like. That doesn't affect me at all. But the I figure once we get to be old, we will be we'll know that even though we don't feel it maybe as much,
our insides are cooking.
Exactly.
From the sun.
We're roasted and basted in our own buttery juices.
We both have a lot of marbling.
I'm not, yeah. Beautiful, beautiful, fatty marbling.
And that's where the flavor is.
What I'm saying to you is that I'm not out here trying to pay $50 extra a month on the electric bill.
Fine. I wasn't here. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't make any difference
to
me.
Guess what?
I want
with you not home,
to be comfortable.
With you not home,
mm-hmm.
the bed was B. The bed was A, twice the size, and B, half as hot.
Fair enough.
You generate so much heat, husband.
And you're not saying that as a compliment.
No, you don't know how I'm saying it, do you?
Oh, I know how you're saying it.
You don't know how I'm saying it.
I know how you're saying it.
You think you know things. You don't know a lot of things. Okay, so
anyway,
it's
the
Tuesday.
The Virginia Film Festival was wonderful. I had a great time. I got to see some old friends from Vanderbilt, including listener to the show, James.
Yes.
Got to see him in a production of Stephen Sondheim's Follies.
Right.
Which was quite good.
Yeah.
And did a really cool critics panel with some other writers from East Coasters. But some interesting conversation about sort of, you know, the state of the industry and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And
which industry? The film critic industry?
The film critic industry. The critiquing industry.
I didn't, whenever people use that expression, you know, like the film critic business or the industry or whatever, I think, I'm not, what?
We're not part of the film industry, but there is a critic, there is a film critic industry.
But what do we indust?
Well, it's, look. There are times,
words,
there
thoughts,
are, there,
ideas.
There are times that we get paid by other people to opine, and so that makes it an industry.
I guess you're right.
And, you know, sometimes more people are paying you, and sometimes fewer people are paying you. And
right.
Sometimes fewer people are paying you less. Like now.
Like right now, yes.
So we talked about that. And I got to see Andrew Ahn's wonderful movie, Driveways, which I don't know that it's screened in L.A. yet. So I really haven't had a chance to see it. It premiered at Berlin, and they had one screening here, and I couldn't review the film because I know Andrew from working with him at Outfest for years.
Yeah.
You know, he did a short film that you know, we've screened several times, and, you know, we showed his movie Spa Night as a gala. So
yes.
I sent Bibbs to review it. Bibbs wrote a glowing review. I saw it finally at Charlottesville and immediately texted Bibbs. I was like, I just saw Driveways and it made me weep.
Yeah.
And he texted back, right?
You're an easy cry, though. Let's be real.
It's still good. You should still see it.
Oh, of course I will.
It's going to be Filmrise picked it up. It's going
to
be.
Just don't expect me to come home all blubbery.
No. You only
all boohoo and
you
weep weep.
You're only the. I only have to call you the wambulance when you're trying to manipulate me into something, and you turn on the spigot.
Or when I'm watching War Horse.
Or when you're watching War Horse,
which is. A wonderful film. Because at the end...
I know, the boy.
War Horse comes home to the boy.
Who loves him, yes.
They love each other so much.
I know. It's okay. They're both dead now. That was at the end of World War I.
They're alive in my heart.
And then he threw the first brick at Stonewall.
Yeah.
50 years later.
Listen, that kid's talented. Trained a horse, communicated with it psychically through the first brick at Stonewall.
I saw Harriet last night, which we'll talk about when it opens for our next episode.
I don't want to see Harriet,
but
I've seen the trailer for Harriet, and if it's like the trailer, I don't want to see the movie.
We'll talk about it when we talk about it. But evil
boy, howdy,
evil plantation guy, main evil plantation guy,
right.
Was played by Joe Alwyn.
Remind me who that is.
Billy Lynn's long halftime
walk. Oh, all right.
And so when I think
he's like 14. How can he be a plantation guy?
He has a mustache.
Like Tom. Oh, that's a nice segue. Like Tom Holland in,
for instance,
the current war.
Yes. Anyway, I kept thinking of him as being Billy Lynn. I was like, at first I didn't recognize him in only 24 frames a second. Because usually, you know, I'm used to seeing him so crisp.
That trailer for Harriet just makes me think of every... speechy Oscar movie that wants nominations. And I think Casey Lemons is a cool director.
She is.
I've liked her films in the past, but oh my. Okay, you can tell me later, but
we'll
I have this gut feeling that the trailer hasn't been cut in a way that will make me feel any differently about it when I'm watching it.
Next time.
You know. Respect to the real Harriet Tubman, but
of course.
This one in the movie looks like I stand for freedom, you know, and I don't know.
So Tom Holland.
Tom Holland has a mustache, but wait, before he grows his mustache.
Or does the mustache have him?
Well, okay. I'm going to tell you things. You guys, a movie opened this weekend.
Yes.
It's Tuesday now. We're 48 hours later than we normally do this show because Alonzo was out of town. And then yesterday, my laptop bit the dust.
Hopefully it's fixable.
Well, we'll find out on Thursday.
Yes.
Because that's the first Apple Genius Bar appointment that they have. All right, so this movie opened. Maybe you didn't hear about it. That would be understandable. It's called The Current War, Director's Cut.
Yes.
Now, maybe you're wondering, how can it be the director's cut if I've never heard of this thing before? Well, I will tell you. In September of 2017, The Current War premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yes, it did.
It's the latest film from Alfonso Gomez-Rejon, who made Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, a movie we did not like.
We did not.
When The Current War, this is about C-U-R-R-E-N-T, not the little fruits.
Now there's a movie.
Yeah. Everyone saw The Current War at Toronto in 2017 and said, eh, why'd they make this? And then it got caught in that no man's land of distribution where the distribution company fell to pieces.
Yes.
Almost immediately after the Toronto Film Festival.
Yes.
That distribution company was the Weinstein Company.
Wah, wah.
And so the next 2 years of this movie not being released and finding a new distributor allowed the director to go back in and unchopify the movie after Harvey Weinstein got a hold of it and did
what he used to do to movies.
What he used to do to movies. Can you stop the recording so we can close the door and the gardener's mower blower thingy can stop making noises into our mics?
I thought maybe it was giving us a little Industrial Revolution ambiance.
We're
to go
back.
With your Edison discussion.
We stopped the microphone. We closed the door. Told our gardener to keep it down.
He's not.
We have a gardener.
Our gardener.
A night watchman. a chauffeur.
I'm Elma J. Fudd, millionaire.
A masseur.
I own a mansion and a yacht.
A maid. An upstairs maid. A cook.
An ostler. And an osteopath.
A Reiki healer. All on staff. Mm.
So you were saying the current
Our apartment building hires a gardener.
Director's cuts.
All right. So 2 years later, director's like, "Hey, I fixed it. Nobody's gonna go anymore.
I fixed a movie.
I'm gonna show this movie to people, and they're all gonna go, hooray for The Current War." People are going to love it. It's about electricity.
And corporate shenanigans.
About Thomas Edison and George Westinghouse and their endless catfights. Mm. And I'm not making that up. That's exactly what this film is about.
Yes.
So Thomas Edison, he had the direct current, which one of them had the AC and one of them had the DC.
You saw
Edison
the movie.
I saw the movie. Don't ask me to remember things. Edison had the direct current. Westinghouse had the alternating current.
Mm-hmm.
And they were both trying to be the first to pretty much make the United States into a giant power grid where everybody could have electricity.
And they put them together and they sang, "Balls to the wall!"
That is exactly what happened after they had a big 1890 fight.
Yes.
And this big fight involved, you know, corporate backers and smear campaigns and, you know, panics about the safety of electric current.
Is there an elephant that gets electrocuted in this part of history? Am I remembering that right?
A horse or an elephant? I know in real life, I think it might have been an elephant.
There's some sort of public demonstration of like, look at what what this will do. Beware. Yeah. It killed this elephant.
Yeah. It was called the electricity panic or the electric wire panic or something like that. But the war of the currents was a real thing. These guys really did, like, take it outside.
Yeah.
But in a, you know, in that way that rich corporate people do and inventors do who are more concerned with getting, you know, their name in the papers than anything else. Now, the film portrays Benedict Cumberbatch as Thomas Edison as being a little full of himself, a little smart alecky, Zuckerbergish.
Okay,
you know, got a snappy answer to everything, in a very 2017 sort of way. Really, sort of like meh, you know, like
right.
Owned, pwned, like all you half expect him.
You just got Wizard of Menlo Park.
Yeah, you. Thank you. You half expect him to use contemporary slang. Like, that's his whole vibe in the movie. His attitude is very much,
Mr. Westinghouse, all your base are belong to us.
I'm a badass. I'm a rock star.
And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I have an idea that Thomas Edison did not necessarily strut about.
Like a popinjay?
In this manner. I'm sure he was a total D, but like...
he was a total, like, thief of patents.
He would do, you know... according to this film, he would pretty much do anything to discredit Westinghouse.
Mm.
Michael Shannon plays Westinghouse. And he's, you know, I'm concerned about my legacy, and I want to do good things, and I want to, you know, make everything, you know, progress. And, you know, he's the idealist. These two performances sort of enliven the film when they are on screen, regardless of how truthful any of their behavior is.
Right.
But
and when they're not on screen?
It is a smoothly gliding conveyor belt of historical incidents. Mm. Very, very economically packaged, even though it's like a full 2 hours. Like, they go through 13 years of history, and they give you dates, times, locations. You know where everyone is. You know what everyone's doing. You know why they're doing it. You know to whom they are doing it. You know with whom they're doing it.
And, like, lots of on-screen, like, May 1901.
Yes.
Kind of
okay. Yeah. Chicago, the World's Fair.
Yes.
Know. And meanwhile...
the Pan-American Exhibition.
Meanwhile, little Tom Holland is Edison's assistant. And then Nicholas Holt plays Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, working with Edison, but then is disgruntled wants to go off on his own. And, you know, meanwhile, I don't know who it was that says it to him in the movie, but he also says it in the trailer.
Yes.
No one will ever hear of anything ever named Tesla again. You're like, oh, haha, I get it. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Because
there was that band later.
What you're doing. And also now a car.
I'm kidding. I know the car, yes.
Powered with electricity.
Mm.
But the movie's really about Nicholas Holt. Not Nicholas Holt. About Tom Holland.
Oh, really?
And what... No, it's not at all. But for me, it is, because he pops up every once in a while, being like, I'm here to assist you, Mr. Edison. Like, it's very...
I'm here to be the other British person in a movie with an American accent.
And then, at the very end, you can tell that now he is a man because he has a widow mustache on his face. He went to pinch his widow cheeks with his widow mustache. The end.
Okay.
Well. Electricity happens, you guys. As I watched this film, I thought,
Was it revolting?
No. Thanks for that joke, though. That was a good one. That was a good joke. Good comedy bit.
Good bit
that you just had
Thank
right
you.
There.
Thanks.
This reminded me of Tulip Fever.
Ooh, another Weinstein.
In that, it's fiasco. About a thing that really happened.
Yes,
but I'm sure that nothing actually in the movie that you're watching really happened.
Of course,
And that you, I mean, the people in it are just, you know, they're just hitting their historical marks and then improvising their attitudes about these characters. It's boring, but also it's sort of fascinating that the way they portrayed Thomas Edison's character has a lot to do with the way we think of sort of like tech entrepreneurs now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these swaggering dudes.
Elon Musk.
Who want to be like billionaires and rock stars and yes. household names. And,
right.
And that's how Edison comes off in this film. But do people aspire to that? Do people aspire to be that sort of unpleasant tech person now? In the wake of Mark Zuckerberg's public persona and the way he conducts his business and, you know, well, everything about him.
Right. I think
do people want to be like that guy?
I think the aspirational thing is to be rich enough to not care. Rich enough
about
not,
anyone or anything, or well, where you live, or the world you live
rich
in.
Rich enough not to care how you are perceived, basically. I don't know.
Fine.
It's not my aspiration.
Anyway, this movie's going to be in theaters for about 5 more minutes.
So best get to it.
So if you have any interest at all, it's got cool cinematography. The guy who worked on... Oh, I'm blanking now. I'm very sorry. Pause that while I look it up. All right, we're back. Chung Chung-hoon, he directed... He was the DP, the cinematographer on The Handmaiden and Ooh. Old Boy. Yeah, so he makes everything look cool.
Okay.
You know, like a you know, point of view of a light socket, you know, or you know, all these like tilty Dutch angle shots, and you know, just very grandiose.
Sure.
And it sure does need it because the rest of the movie is about people fighting over a patent.
Mm.
It's a big argument they're having with the over the patent.
Well, you know, he had to think, oh God, I can't do that Tesla shot from The Prestige.
Right.
You know, but I'm sure they managed to find other stuff to do.
Hey, guess what?
What?
We're happy as can be with Ovid.TV. Sit with Ovid and drink my tea. I'd marry Ovid TV with polygamy. I wrote a song.
Yes, you clearly spent a lot of time on it.
I don't have any copy in front of me because I don't have a laptop in front of me. Ugh. And I don't know what's going on with Ovid.TV, except I love it so much. I'm glad we have it. Why don't you tell people what it is and what's new coming up?
Yes.
And then why don't you say everything?
You can.
Because I wrote a song and now it's time for you to do the work.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Ovid.TV is an amazing streaming service that pulls together some of the coolest indie distributors around. So you got your Grasshopper Films, you got your Bullfrog, you got your Kim Stim, you got your Women Make Movies, and a whole bunch of other ones. And so like these are the cool movies that we'll talk about on the show and we'll tell you, hey, do you live near a museum or a university? Get ready for the one night it's going to be there. You know?
Right.
But now you can see them in your own house or yes. on your phone or yes. on your laptop
don't
or whatever.
On your phone.
Well, you shouldn't ideally know, but all you know. Right.
Don't watch things on your phone.
It's an option.
Don't
anyway.
Do it.
So, Ovid.TV, they've got really cool stuff. So, coming up this Friday, November 1st,
yes.
four new narrative films
yes.
from France.
You know, I like that country.
I know you like a French movie. So, there is a film called Guy. Maybe it's Guy. I'm not sure.
It's probably Guy. It's That's probably how they Guy. Say it there, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's a mockumentary.
It's about this guy.
It's about this guy. Guys. It's about a washed-up 70-something pop star and the son who attempts to get to know the father that he never knew. It premiered at Cannes Critics Week in 2018. There's also a film called Return of the Hero, an 1809 France a captain who is about to get married when the war breaks out, and he starts getting letters from his beloved sister, and that gets complicated.
Oh.
Yes.
Wait a second. How beloved is his sister?
Well, we'll have to see the film. A film called School
Is this where Prince got the idea for that song?
I don't know. I'm thinking no. a film called School of Life about an orphan who has been raised in an orphanage in suburban Paris, yeah. And has a chance to sort of expand his destiny when a bohemian couple in the country wants to adopt him.
Don't leave Paris, kid. There's stuff to do there.
The woodland scenery is apparently gorgeous.
I suppose.
So.
All right.
And then also a film called, if you want Paris, called Paris Love Cut. About a guy who...
Paris Love Cut. That's what
it's Paris, called. Paris, Love, Cut.
Okay. All right.
Arno turns 45 and wants to have a child with Chloe, but she turns him down. After they broke up, Arno returns to teaching theater and meets the enticing Gabrielle.
Mm.
So... Those are just four of the many, many films.
Here's the great thing about movies from France. Even if they're not all that good, you're still watching a French movie.
Yeah.
And then
they're probably going to eat something
sometimes
really amazing.
That's just enough.
Or they're going to walk down a really cool sidewalk.
Yeah. Now, we can be in France for like 90 minutes at least. Yeah.
It's a vacation without leaving your living room.
Uh-huh.
So they got documentaries, they've got shorts, they've got experimental films, cool directors that you know and want to get
cannot praise them highly
more
enough.
Caught up on filmmakers yeah. you don't know yet, but you ought to know. So yeah,
what's the deal going on?
Well, let me.
Why don't you say it? Do it.
I'll just get there, won't I?
Yeah.
So, as a special introductory offer for Linoleum Knife listeners. Save 50% off the first 3 months of your subscription.
Yep.
Just head over to www.ovid.tv. That's www.ovid.tv. Sign up with the coupon code podcast and you'll get ovid.tv for just $3.50 a month for 3 months. The offer expires on November 30th, so act now.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ovid.
Why don't you tell people about the film called Jojo Rabbit?
Okay. So this is the latest from Taika Waititi. You know, the guy who gave us What We Do in the Shadows and Thor Ragnarok.
Yep.
And I still need to see Hunt for the Wilder People, which I have not gotten around to. And apparently now this movie called Boy that Bib says is great and is streaming on Canopy. I got to get to that too.
Yep.
Anyway, so this is a satire set in the waning days of World War II. A young boy named
the
Jojo.
The last moments.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the last few months, I guess. Yeah. Jojo is a young boy who is committed to the Hitler Youth.
He's 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10 years old. And, you know, his father has been gone for a while, you know, in the war. His mother's played by Scarlett Johansson, and she seems to
tolerate his Hitler youthiness.
Yes, while also sort of, you know, implying that, you know, he might broaden his worldview.
Right.
And he has an imaginary and encouraging best friend who is Adolf Hitler, who is played by Taika Waititi. And as things start getting more complicated and the war starts taking a really bad turn for the German side, Jojo discovers that his mother is hiding a teenage Jewish girl played by
Thomasin McKenzie.
Thomasin McKenzie, thank you. In their walls and has to sort of figure out what he really believes and what he doesn't. And this won the Audience Award at the Toronto Film Festival.
Yeah.
So people are already talking about it as a they're talking about it as a major league Oscar contender, but some people are also saying, so it's this year's Green Book then, which depending on what you thought about Green Book and what you thought about this, maybe you're not going to be crazy about that comparison. You go first.
I'm a big fan of Taika Waititi.
Yes.
And I am a big fan of the kind of comedy that he does.
Mm-hmm.
Where his focus is always on the absurdity and the silliness and the ineptitude of his subjects.
Yeah.
So, for example, the TV show What We Do in the Shadows, all of the vampires in it are kind of bumbling and they don't really know what they're doing
all
the time.
They're not good at being vampires.
They're not that good at it.
And you saw the movie too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he took the, you know, the towering mythologies of Marvel characters and just, you know, lit some gas into them in Thor Ragnarok. Made people weirder, made his characters weirder, made some of them sexier, made some of them more fallible. And so here, he is taking, you know, German Nazis and making them seem ridiculous. This is not the first time someone has done this. Charlie Chaplin did it.
Mel Brooks
has done it. And so since World War II, since the end of World War II, the competing, you know, narrative, in depending on, you know, whose narrative you're watching, is one where these are the most evil people of the 20th century. But then also sometimes they're the most ridiculous people of the 20th century. They are easy targets to be made jokes. And honestly, depending on my mood, you know, I would think this is a funny movie or think that this is a, you know, there's no time for this right now.
So you're not saying while you're watching it, you mean just in theory?
In theory, yeah. While I watched it, because I knew who I was going to see and what I was going to go see, mm-hmm. I was on board for this film that is a comedy. Mm-hmm. Until it stops being a comedy.
Yes.
Now, when it stops being a comedy, that's when the spoilers start, and I really don't want to get into those. But I do want to say,
Germany loses the war.
Well, yes, but I'm talking about what happens to the characters.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, this isn't Inglourious Basterds. There's no rewriting of history here. It happens the way it happens. Now, these characters, however, are fictional. I will go so far as to say that the character of Adolf Hitler is fictional because
he is the creation of this kid.
He's the creation of this child who doesn't understand who Adolf Hitler really is.
Yeah.
To him, Adolf Hitler is Luke Skywalker. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He's a hero who's doing something, you know, great for the country and who the diabolical nature of this man is lost to this child because, as Thomasin McKenzie says later in the film, Jojo, you're not a Nazi. You're just an excited little boy who wants to wear a uniform and be a part of a group.
Yeah, in a club, I think.
In a club, or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and there are actually, I was reading one review that talked about how there have been historical books published in the last few decades that were literally like children's letters to Hitler.
Right.
Because their perception of him was via this vast and, you know, intricate network of propaganda.
Correct.
So, you know, yeah, what their conception of this guy and what this guy actually was are two very different things.
So that's an interesting element. And Taika Waititi as Hitler, and Taika Waititi himself is Jewish. Mm-hmm. And
like Mel Brooks and Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. And so, Taika Waititi as Hitler is a tightrope walker of an actor. He is fully invested in being this whimsical imaginary creation of this boy's imagination. The kids are good.
Yeah,
the boy who plays
Roman Griffin Davis
and Thomasin McKenzie as the girl hiding in the crawl space. And I like the ending. I find the ending very moving. And again, I won't give away why or how. But there's a gear-lurching mechanism to get to that place.
Yeah.
That I found cheap and troubling. And so I may not feel that way in a month. Because I've spent the past couple weeks going back and forth in my head about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really found it sort of hilarious during the first, like, two-thirds. And then jolting in a way I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought it really stuck the ending. again, in ways that I cannot say how or why.
No, I did.
But this is erratic filmmaking.
Yeah.
That I still appreciate and want to. I want to watch it again.
Yeah, I think we're mostly on the same page.
Yeah.
Because I admire the audacious parts so much.
Yeah.
Like, he's taking stuff that shouldn't be funny, or that if you're going to try and make it funny, you better get it just right. And he does.
Yeah.
And he, you know, like, there is a, this happens very early in the film, so it's not a spoiler, but like, the under the opening credits, you hear a German language version of the Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Hand, because he is equating, again, that sort of propaganda, you know, inflation of Hitler and his might and
it's
his greatness.
It's cut with clips from Triumph of the Will of girls, like, screaming like they're at Shea Stadium for the Beatles.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, he turns like, you know, Nazi, he turns the Goebbels propaganda machine into Beatlemania. And I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant.
Right.
And you know, when you have scenes like Stephen Merchant as the Gestapo guy who's searching the house and telling Jojo he admires his fanaticism, you know, and stuff like that. Like, that is all.
Stephen Merchant is both funny and a little terrifying.
Yeah. Like, it is, again, that sort of balancing act of, like, you are threatening and terrifying, but you're also funny. And so when the movie does that stuff, I am in awe of it, and I admire of it, and I think I'm an admirer of it. I think it's great. But then
That stuff happens.
And just in a larger sense, it also, this is a movie that wants to be like a coming of age film.
Right.
And it gets a little too, it doesn't do the sentiment nearly as well as it does the humor.
Yeah.
And a movie that it kind of reminds me of, in that it's a coming of age movie against World War II, is John Borman's Hope and Glory.
Yes.
Which is autobiographical.
Yeah.
And so he never sentimentalizes that kid. That kid is a brat.
Right.
And a pain in the ass. Right. And, like, you know, he is completely always sort of selfish and looking through the world, you know, through his own kind of just immediate needs and pleasures or whatever. But you love him anyway. And you recognize him as an actual human kid. And this movie just wants to go to places that just feel so artificial, given how much we believe in the comic absurdity of the comically absurd parts.
Yeah.
So that's, I this movie rips me in half, but I think people should see it for the stuff that works.
And there's another kid in the film.
Oh God, the friend.
this little kid actor. This is his first movie. This kid's name is Archie Yates. Oh, I think he's British.
Yes.
And
kudos.
He steals every scene he's in, because he's so guileless and so happy.
His line delivery is spot on.
And he's, if you dislike most everything else in the film, you're gonna love this kid.
I also really like Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
And I run hot and cold with him, but I liked him a lot in this one, and I think the function that he serves in the movie is an important one.
I think Scarlett Johansson is really good.
She's very good at this. She's having a great, I cannot wait for you to see Marriage Story.
Right.
She's so great in that too. But yeah, like, that, there's a lot to like in this movie. I mean,
she's annoying in real life.
But yeah, please stop giving interviews, but keep acting.
In films, yes.
You know, Rebel Wilson is funny. I mean, like, there's a lot to like about this movie, but I just don't think he gets all the pieces to fit together as well as he might have liked. But it's, you know, he's taking a big swing here.
Right.
You know, he's trying to do a lot of stuff, and more than you would expect works, but it doesn't all work. And so that's when people, I think some people have gone bananas about this film, and I'm like, I wish I had that level of enthusiasm, but I just can't, because I don't think it is as complete a vision as he would have liked.
I want you to say the words Zombieland, double tap.
Zombieland, double tap. This is one of, you know, every time you say, like, that, you know, this movie is useless, and people are like, well, what movie is not useless? And I was like, yeah, okay, we didn't need most movies to exist, but Zombieland Double Tap feels when I walked out, I thought that felt like watching one of those Rat Pack movies, that was just sort of like they got together and, you know, had some drinks and occasionally shot some scenes and just kind of breezed through the whole thing. And not even like Ocean's 11, like Robin and the Seven Hoods, like lesser Rat Pack. And I never hated this movie, but it just disappears in a puff of smoke. You hated it, I guess.
I walk out of it.
Or does it? Can it even? Is it the kind of movie that can make you hate? Because like that would inspire strong emotion.
I should feel something about it.
Yeah.
I feel nothing about it.
Exactly.
If I was desperate for a zombie movie, I'd be like, okay, is it a zombie movie? Yes. Okay, I guess I'll watch this because I want to see a zombie movie. And then even on that level, I would be like, what's wrong with these fake bloody CGI effects?
No one needs to be there. Like,
no.
Everybody involved in this movie has somewhere better to be right now.
Yeah. And it feels like that's how they are approaching their tasks. Yeah.
But like nobody made them, you know. I think if they wanted to get out of it, they could have. Why not? That we had fun 10 years ago. Let's just do that.
They all had dinner. This is in my head.
Uh-huh.
They all had dinner and they're like, hey, you want to do another one?
Ooh, could we?
And like we had such a good time.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Making that other one. Why don't we make this one too? Oh, there's no script? Let's just do it anyway.
Yeah, this movie is a fribble.
Yeah. I have no other words and no other thoughts and no other concerns about this movie. I've already forgotten most of it.
Yeah.
Even the parts with Rosario Dawson, the love of my life.
Yes. Like there's an extended bit where Luke Wilson and Thomas Middleditch show up and the joke is that they're exactly like Woody Harrelson and not Zuckerberg. The guy, you know,
Jesse
Eisenberg.
Eisenberg.
And it's like this was a Seinfeld episode.
Kinda. Yeah, I spent most of the time with Thomas Middleditch thinking about him being a swinger.
Oh, right, yeah. Trying to put that out of my head, but there it is again. Thanks.
I mean, for all we know, he's not one anymore. I bet his wife's pretty mad at him right now.
For talking about it. The first rule of the Sans Souci. You do not talk about the Sans Souci. The Sans Souci was an infamous swinger nightclub in Dallas.
Oh, cool. You know, I went there one night.
Yeah, yes. I think you've told this story on the show before.
Have we? Are you sure?
I think you have.
If I did, it was
Tell it again, babe.
It was a long
Tell
time ago.
Tell it again. Tell it again.
It was like 1992. My friend Andy and I, a female Andy, A-N-D-E-E, she calls me up and she goes, hey, do you want to go to a swinger club? I said, what happens? She goes, I don't think anyone's doing sex there. She goes, but it is sort of like a place where people meet up and dance and, you know, romance one another's spouses.
Feel each other out, if you will.
I said, but what? Why are you going? And she said, she's part of, this was 1992, remember?
Right, yes.
All right. She was on some computer bulletin board or whatever.
Oh, a BBS. Yeah.
Like she had a computer. Like she, Andy was a tech nerd before all of you guys. All right. How about that? And
I'm sure some of our listeners are like, hey, I had a nightmare.
And so she's like, yeah, some of them are, you know, in the lifestyle and they're having a meet and greet at the Swingers Club. And she's like, so come with me and pretend to be my boyfriend.
Oh.
And I was like, okay. So we go. It's so boring.
You're looking for the bowl to put your car keys in.
Yes. I'm looking for the back room. I mean, y'all, straight people, you know, gays, they had the back rooms in their bars. Well, they don't really much anymore.
Not so much now.
Unless you're in a place like, you know, Berlin or whatever. But, like, It was dull. The best part of the night was the DJ who would talk in between songs. Because he wasn't a DJ the way you would think of a club DJ, just mixing songs together.
Mm-hmm.
He was playing like run-of-the-mill radio dance hits. And then would play like slow dance songs. Mm-hmm. So he could play like Michael Bolton songs and stuff. And like before one of the Michael Bolton-y slow dance songs, he's like, get out on the dance floor with your wife. Or somebody else's wife.
Oh. Smooth, DJ Kevin.
So that alone made it worth it. But Andy and I sat at the table in the booth with our drinks, like designing our own Swingers Club, like out loud. Like she's like, okay, the lights should all be purple. There should be like vintage, like 50s and 60s stag films being projected on the walls. It should be a lot weirder and more David Lynch, you know, but it wasn't like that at all.
Maybe Thomas Middleditch and his wife are completely revolutionizing the scene, making it less shag carpety.
When I run into them next time, I'll ask them.
Yes, let's find out.
Hey, we're in the middle of Chipotle. You guys! How are you guys revolutionizing the lifestyle? Three to four informational facts, please.
People have a right to know.
Yes.
Now that you've opened this door. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, she's filing for divorce. I mean, I don't know if she is, but yeah. The Lighthouse.
Oh, The Lighthouse.
Oh, The Lighthouse. This is the new film from Robert Eggers.
Yes.
Who made The Witch. And I would like to, first of all, complain about the marketing campaign.
Oh, would you?
Yes, I would. Because they are using excerpts from somebody's write-up of this movie, calling it a horror film.
Again? That's how they marketed The Witch and made people mad.
The Witch is kind of a horror film.
Ish.
The Lighthouse is not a horror film. The Lighthouse is an unsettling film. The Lighthouse is about the horrifying qualities of human nature.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't no horror movie.
I mean, it's a horror movie.
It's like, really cool.
Along the lines of maybe something like Repulsion, but except that...
Indeed, you know, yes.
Without the bunny killing.
Yes, so Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson are wikis. The men who light the light in the lighthouse. They're wikis. This is...
1880s?
1880s-ish. Yeah. It was shot up in Nova Scotia, and it looks like it.
Mm.
They are on a desolate rock. There's no town nearby, nothing. They are alone out there. Willem Dafoe's the boss. Robert Pattinson is the new guy, having to learn the trade.
Mm-hmm.
Willem Dafoe, of course, abuses this situation and makes Robert Pattinson work day and night and day and night, grinding him to dust. Meanwhile, Willem Dafoe cooks the weird food that they eat at night.
Something happened to the previous guy who had the gig.
Yeah, but we don't know.
Yeah.
And...
maybe there's a mermaid.
I say there is a mermaid. I vote yes that there's a real mermaid.
Okay, fine.
I also vote yes that when Willem Dafoe says, "Don't make the gulls angry," and meet the next, all the photo you see for the rest of the movie is these seagulls looking at the camera like, "I will kill you," taking their little feet wings. Their wings and feet and like making slashing noises, slashing moves across their neck. You're the meanest looking seagulls.
Yes.
It's in black and white. Very silvery, beautiful, shadowy, crisp black and white. that old Academy ratio.
Oh, no. It's not even Academy ratio.
What is it?
Academy ratio is like 1:33:1.
What is this?
This is even smaller.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes perfect sense.
Squarer.
This makes perfect sense because there's so much like close up on faces in this. It's you feel so boxed in with these guys from the visual storytelling alone. And they spend their time driving each other mad.
1.19.
Oh, my. Well, okay. I'm corrected.
It's the silent. It's like silent film aspect of the show.
They spend their time driving each other mad.
Yeah.
And they also do a thing that... Have you ever read Moby Dick? Well, you should. Because Moby Dick and Billy Budd and other Melvillian work, there's a whole...
Wait, can they be Melvillian if Melville actually wrote them? Wouldn't that describe somebody else's novels that resemble Melville?
Yes, you're right. I'm being dumb. Anyway, okay. So if you read enough Melville,
yes,
you'll note the... intensely homosocial, bordering on homoerotic nature of the relationships between men.
Mm-hmm.
This one is so much that a scene in which they are about this close from kissing, mm-hmm. like inches apart from each other's face, immediately turns into a fist fight.
As you do.
So, I've had another couple weeks to see this one. Another couple weeks.
To ruminate.
Oh, yes. That's a good word. Mm. My ruminations.
Yes.
Have been plentiful.
Mm-hmm.
This is about isolation and loneliness and what men are allowed to be with each other and amongst each other. It's about how... nature can get in the way of your impulses or can shape your impulses. So either human nature or the natural world around you, like these gulls,
mm-hmm.
like the storms, like the wind, like the dark. Sometimes the supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be an element of the supernatural going on in this film.
Maybe.
But it's about what happens to people when they are shut off from the world and from each other, and how they're allowed to express themselves as they, get too close, get too antagonistic, get too, wild in their minds. And I loved it.
I think I
walked in the house after seeing it and said, that was an experience. And I will tell you what kind of experience I think it is later.
I think with this and The Witch, I feel like I admire this guy's movies a great deal.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily like them.
Right.
But I don't know that I'm meant to, in a way, because I feel like they are designed to be disturbing and claustrophobic, and no one ever looks warm enough. And
oh, especially here. They are cold and wet all the time. And the roof is leaking. It's like,
So it just... I feel like he comes onto set and he's got like a...
There are moments of coziness in Satan Tango.
Yes, by comparison.
Compared to this movie.
Yeah. I feel like Eggers comes on set with a giant binder that says atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
And then like a very thin one that says, plot, characters,
and
story.
Oh, I don't care about plots.
I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying this is what he does. Yes, Dave,
like it matters.
You're so cool in how you defy narrative. Anyway.
I really am, aren't I? I hang on.
Pat that back.
Patting myself on the back.
So anyway, I remember watching this and thinking, like, this is the kind of movie that gets an F cinema score.
Oh, yes.
But if this were a wide release, people would get duped into the theater because A24 would market it as a horror movie, or the people would come to see Robert Pattinson or whatever,
right.
And then they'd be like, what was that?
Listen.
So you have to know.
There's a lot of Robert Pattinson delivering a kind of anguished pleasure to himself.
Yes.
How shall I say it? That way? That's a good way to describe it.
That's a good way to say it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to get a load of that.
Yeah.
No pun intended. But.
I think as long as you know going in that that's what you're going to get, that this is going to be a movie that is just like trying to, that it feels like it's trying to make you crazy too. That's how immersive it is.
Yeah. It's something else.
Yeah. So if you know that's what you're getting, that's what you're getting.
The other thing when I walked in after seeing it that night, I saw it was, I thought, I don't know that I ever need to watch it again, but now I'm thinking I might.
Will you enjoy that?
Yeah.
I'm good.
Will you join me?
Has it been 2 weeks? 5 days?
11 years? Perhaps.
And it is one of my deepest fears in the world is to, like, drink water that comes out of a cistern that has horrible things in it.
No spoilers, but that's something that does happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. We both agree on the DVD pick of the week.
Boy, howdy.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Tell them.
Some people wait a lifetime for a moment like this.
Tell them.
The Criterion Collection, bless their hearts, has released the definitive Godzilla box set celebrating the early years, what they call the Showa era. It is here's the thing. You know, I don't care how much you like streaming and how convenient it is and all that stuff. Like, there is something to be said for the beauty of physical media packaging. You know, when we all went to CDs, it meant giving up those beautiful double albums with the big gatefolds and the posters tucked inside and all that kind of stuff,
right?
Which later made a comeback when we realized that we missed that when it
right.
went away,
right?
So this is a big, beautiful Blu-ray collection with, like, you know, it's like a big book. And so it's got, like, these pages with lovely artwork, great essays by our friend Steve Reifel, who's written an entire book about Ishiro Honda. And it covers the first 21 years of Godzilla, 1954 to 1975. And it has Godzilla.
Yeah.
Godzilla Raids Again.
Yeah, yeah.
King Kong versus Godzilla.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mothra versus Godzilla. Ghidorah, the three-headed monster.
Mm-hmm.
Invasion of Astro Monster. Ibira, Horror of the Deep. Son of Godzilla. Destroy All Monsters!
The greatest film of all time.
Yes. All Monsters Attack. Godzilla versus Hedorah. Godzilla versus Gigan. Godzilla versus Megalon. Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. And then winds things up with Terror of Mechagodzilla.
Megalo.
Terror of Mechagodzilla, bringing up the rear. And, you know, it's a Criterion Collection set, so it's got, like, tons of extras and interviews and, you know, everything you can watch in Japanese or in the English dub. It's just gorgeous. So, like, if you know somebody who has a really great home theater and they really care about, like, cool video stuff, or somebody who is super into kaiju or whatever, like, this is the Christmas present.
Yeah.
Because this thing is just stunning.
Mm-hmm. I, when this showed up in the mail, I thought, I saw my first Criterion Collection film when I was 8 years old. Because that's when I saw Destroy All Monsters.
Right.
And now it's in the Criterion Collection. So I was a cinephile early.
Oh, yes.
Is what I'm saying.
Indeed. When it came in the mail, I just wanted to, like, put a blanket down on the living room floor and pour many bowls of cereal. And just watch all of them.
Yes. I sort of imagine the week after Christmas.
Oh, there you go.
Being a time when we will be able to luxuriate with this.
Christmas time is Gojira
time. All right, you have all the letters and the reviews and everything. Are you going to read them? Do you got that stuff?
You know what?
Or should we save it for next time or what?
This is kind of a 0.5 episode, so yeah, we'll save it for next time. We
because I don't have any way to read anything in front of me.
We have a couple of 4-star reviews. We
you mean
will,
5-star reviews.
You're right, sorry. Yes, 5-star reviews, including one that's a revision from the 4-star review, so that's very...
Oh.
Because we upped our intro game. That was the whole point. So,
all right.
More on that next time.
Thanks.
In the meantime,
why don't you go to patreon.com? I'll handle this.
Okay, fine.
Why don't you go to patreon.com/ linoleum knife and join our club? Membership begins at $1 per month, all the way up to $20 a month. You get a lot of things. You get different podcasts, one about TV, one about food, one about things. You get items, objects. You get a Christmas ornament if you want one.
Mm-hmm.
You get private podcasts with the topic of your choosing.
Hangouts.
Hangouts, streaming movies with us once a month. All these things. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yeah.
Now, I have an announcement.
No. You don't need to tell the world this.
I do need to tell the world this because I need to communicate this information to all the people who it affects.
Well, they should have all gotten an email from Patreon about this.
They did, but that doesn't mean they opened it. They might they might be ignoring their email, and this might be the way that they can hear that information.
All right.
Hey, guys. I am now currently speaking to the people who are already Patreon members who are at the $16 level and the $20 level. If you are at the $20 level, that means you get something called LK Selector, where we send you a few things every we send you a few things each year, and then we set Google Hangouts to talk about them. Some of you have already received your LK Selector items, and some of you are waiting for them still. They are in the mail. Those items should be a DVD of Hirokazu Koreeda's film Shoplifting.
Shoplifters,
pardon me, and a book called The Man Who Invented Christmas, which is a history of Charles Dickens's career before and after A Christmas Carol, and the way that the novel, the way that the story A Christmas Carol shaped contemporary Christmas celebrations. It's a nonfiction book. It's sort of a cultural history. It was made into a terrible movie.
The book's way better.
But the book is really good. So you're supposed to get those things in the mail. However, some of you, 7 of you to be exact, and I don't know which ones of, I don't know who you are, because I don't know who got this book instead. Some of y'all got the Karen Carpenter book. Here's why. A little while ago, we had a promotion where we said, hey, 6 of you, give or take, if you sign up at the $16 level or you upgrade to the $16 level, you get the book Why Karen Carpenter Matters by our pal Karen Tongson. Signed by Karen Tongson.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm, you know, normally very organized, and I took those Karen Tongson books and I put them in envelopes and I set them aside. I separated them from the Charles Dickens books. And then, in a fog of absent-mindedness, I combined them with the Charles Dickens books that themselves were already packed into envelopes, and I mailed them out to the wrong people. So, if you are an LK Selector person and suddenly you have a copy of Why Karen Carpenter Matters, congratulations. You now are the proud owner of a book called Why Karen Carpenter Matters. Keep it.
Enjoy it.
Enjoy it. Read it. But I need to know who you are so that I can send you the real selector item. I have a stack of about 7 copies of this Charles Dickens book on my table right now, waiting for someone to say, oh, hey, you sent me the wrong book. I would like the Charles Dickens book as well, since it is the selector item.
Yes.
Now, if you were supposed to get the Karen Carpenter book,
we know who you are.
We know who you are. And I've already ordered a new batch of books, and I'm going to get Karen to sign them, and you're going to get them. When I told Alonzo Duralde about this, Here was his response. Would you like to say it, or would you want me to say it?
Why are you so bad at being OCD?
Yes, that is what he said. Anyway, that's the story, you guys. I know I've just done an advertisement for our Patreon and then a disclaimer and a deterrent to our Patreon.
Yes.
Sometimes I make mistakes.
It happens.
And then I'm a little embarrassed.
But we fix them.
I own it and I fix it. Yes. So, yes.
Taken care of. Yes, patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check out our friends on the internet, ChristyLemire.com. Go listen to Bibbs and Whitney at all their shows at the Critically Acclaimed Network, which they are now running. Check out Schmozno and Dennis Henun with Dennis Hensley. The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys of the Movies, Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us that 5-star review. We will be reading them on the show. Like next time, we're going to read the two that we just got. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Spotify, Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, etc. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And, yeah, this was sort of an in-betweener episode because I was out of town and we haven't seen stuff, but now we have and we will, and we'll have more this weekend. It'll be great. None of that made any sense.
It made sense to me.
Fine. All right. Thank you all for listening. You're great. We'll catch you next time. Until then.
Goodbye.